Chapter 2. Simple Facts in All Likelihood. Not alone. Just lonely. When my mother was born in 1927, we had hardly realized yet that our sun was just another star. We did not know the difference between a star and a galaxy, only that some stars looked a bit fuzzy. Now, 9 years later, we know staggeringly more. The universe is neither static nor collapsing, but is expanding and at an accelerating rate. With extremely sensitive radio telescopes, we have identified and begun to understand exotic quasars and pulsars, hundreds of millions and billions of light years away. We see light that is 16 billion light years away. Knowing that is exactly the same as saying that the light is from 16 billion years ago. Probably remnants of a Big Bang. We don't see black holes, but we know they are there, immeasurably massive, at the very hearts of galaxies. For black holes, gravity is our light. We know that our galaxy, the Milky Way, is more or less average in size and contains about 250 billion stars. And now we know that there are several hundreds of billions of galaxies. Recent estimates suggest 400 billion galaxies or more in the visible universe, many of them vastly bigger than ours. What does it mean that there are 400 billion galaxies, each with a few hundred billion stars? With simple arithmetic, we may begin plotting our position in infinity and in eternity, in the scheme of things, as they say. In what follows, I ask those of you who do not feel quite at home with math to be a bit carefree and think not so much about arithmetic as about general comparisons of extent and of scale. 400 billion galaxies times 250 billion stars equals 100 sextillion stars. Yes, sextillion, or in other words, 100 and then 7 trios of zeros. 100 and then 21 zeros of stars. That is 100,000 million, million, millions of stars. I find vast numbers easier to contemplate when rendered in image. Take sugar. If every star in the universe were a sugar cube, the sugar cubes would be over our heads across all land on Earth. All the land you've ever flown over and all the rest, every sports field, golf course, ski hill or city, all farmland, forests, mountain ranges and continents, 6 feet deep in sugar cubes. Of course, even that analogy is like saying 100 sextillion is too vast to imagine, but I think it's not that vast even for us. Let's try words in a book. If each star in our Milky Way galaxy were named in a book, the book would be 32 miles thick. You could read the equivalent of a popular novel each day, but it would still take 14,269 years to read each of the names of all of the stars in our single galaxy. If every galaxy in the universe were named, that book would be 53 miles thick, 8 times higher than Mount Everest is above sea level. It would take 22,830 years to read the names of all of the galaxies in the universe. But the names of every star in every galaxy in the universe would fill a book that goes around Earth's equator 10,380 times. It would take 113 billion years to read every name. How long is 113 billion years? Cosmologists now estimate that about 16 billion years have passed since a Big Bang. If you had been reading out stars' names since that Big Bang, you would still have 6 more Big Bangs to go before you had read out the names of all the stars in the universe. Between Google and a cell phone calculator, any fourth grade kid can check my arithmetic. And what on earth do we think of this? I am a member of a self-ordained intelligent species that thinks itself alone in a universe that we, only 100 years ago, did not even know existed. As members of this group, we call ourselves human beings. We think that among that many stars, so many that it would take 7 Big Bangs to call out each of their names, if we called the roll, still, from only one, would we hear, present. Our most imaginative argument in support of our uniqueness meme is that we've never heard from anybody. As if anybody could possibly know how to get in touch with us, but for some reason would not bother. If you're reading this, I'll have to allow that probably you're one of us human beings, too. Because, at least for now, I'm prepared to give you that the chances of this book having some wider audience than just humans on Earth, though vastly compelling, have yet to be granted. But what are my chances of having such a wider audience? Subheading: The Misconception of 10 Trillion. If what has occurred on Earth, the existence of creatures with approximately the awareness level of human beings, is a 1 in 250 billion chance, there must be one more species like us in every other galaxy, more or less. That would be 400 billion more species like us in the universe. For now, let's call that the misconception of 400 billion, because I'm afraid that that number is laughably low. Let's see. The misconception of 400 billion is predicated upon the assumption that thoughtful life occurs only once in every 250 billion stars. Yet our empirical experience is that wherever we have come across a planet with large amounts of liquid surface water, there exists thoughtful species in every case, ours. If the chances of finding planets with liquid surface water are 1 in a million, then there are 250,000 such watery planets in our galaxy. I would bet that the chances are more like 1 in 10,000, which would mean there are 25 million such watery planets in our galaxy. However that may be, time will tell. But let us return to what we know for certain. Probably our empirical experience will prove again to be fallible knowledge, and the chances of there being thoughtful life on any planet with liquid surface water are not 100%. If the chances of a planet with thoughtful life on it are not 1 in 250 billion stars, but rather are, say, 1 in 10 billion, so that a planet with thoughtful life upon it revolves around 1 in every 10 billion stars, then there would be 25 other such species in our galaxy alone. 25 thoughtful species in each of 400 billion galaxies equals 10 trillion thoughtful species in the universe. So I will rename my hypothesis the misconception of 10 trillion. I am aware that my knowledge is fallible, and I fully expect my misconception to be wrong by a few trillion in either direction. Nonetheless, 10 trillion, though a very modest number, is sufficient to make the point currently in the crosshairs. Subtitle: If I Were God. If I were God in a universe of 10 trillion thoughtful species, I'm afraid I would have a hard time caring whether they called me God or Ishtar or Pamela, or indeed whether they regarded me at all. It's much more likely I would think,
"Really, I have heard it all, you know, John. After all, I am God." The Hindus are right, just a bit conservative in their guess. I have had 100 quadrillion names. I certainly could not care less whether the Protestants survive the Catholic, much less whether the Flames beat the Canucks. But here's where things get a bit startling for mere persons who, unlike myself, are not gods. Really, I could not give a damn if any particular thoughtful species survive or not. Over eternity, I have seen trillions and quadrillions of such species come and go. Most of them have lasted as long as human beings. You know, 200,000 years. Maybe 100 million thoughtful species have gone on to manage their affairs like grown-ups and survived a million years or more. Some of my favorites have even outlasted Earth dinosaurs, which ran about for a couple of 100 million years. I have set afoot a universal system that generates species. It's how shit works, man. And by the way, without disclosing my beliefs about my own existence, please know this for certain. If you think me smart enough to create a universe in which evolution does not exist, but you think that it is beyond me to create one in which it does, I'm afraid your opinion of me is lower than you think it is. Look within. There are our diamonds. Back over to you, John. Keep up the good work, eh?
Thanks. You bet, God. Anytime. Subtitle: How Shit Works, Man. If we care to, we may understand much better now how our universe works. There are more living species beneath the surface of Earth than there are upon and above it combined. Many of these species are immeasurably ancient and can exist in conditions that occur on planets anywhere in the universe. Life persists deep in our frozen, airless rocks, in deep seawater superheated by Earth's core. Indeed, life could do so easily everywhere in the universe. Even in moons and asteroids and other bits of exploded planets and in the ice balls of comets. Whether by chance or intention, life wants to replicate and replenish itself. Where life occurs, DNA tends to persist more in organisms that function better. That is to say, in organisms that replicate more successfully. Gene patterns that replicate more reliably recur more. Another way of saying it is, genes that replicate more reliably tend to survive those that do not. By natural selection and other mechanisms, life tends to exert itself. If life on Earth culminated in plants and eventually animals, why wouldn't we expect life to do so anywhere else? Or, indeed, everywhere else. Smarter creatures tend to be more successful competitors, therefore they tend to replicate more successfully. And so greater varieties of smarter species develop, with ever greater awareness. On Earth, the vast variations of species culminated in what we consider to be thoughtful beings. Why should we not expect them to have done so anywhere else? Indeed, why not everywhere else? Or, at least, anywhere there is liquid water? Subtitle: The Misconception of Zero. Simple arithmetic may show us something another way. Knowing what we know, if among all the stars in the universe, seven big bangs to call the names of each, there occurred once and only once an instance of thoughtful beings, and it happened to be us, that would be a fucking miracle. Granted. Simple arithmetic may show us something another way. Knowing what we know, if among all the stars in the universe, seven big bangs to call out the names of each, there occurred once and only once an instance of thoughtful beings, and that happened to be us, that would be a fucking miracle. Granted. But if that were the case, it is all the more wonder that we don't act like it. Whatever the number of our equals or better in the universe might be, to be sure, the odds that we are the most advanced among them are something like 1 in a trillion. We might as well say 0. You can say that again. And so, this book's primary misconceptions are: 1. The misconception of 10 trillion. There are at least 10 trillion thoughtful species in the universe. And 2. The misconception of 0. The chance that we are the most advanced among them is 0. Even here we would be softly stepping past our misconception that we already know just about everything. Subtitle: What We Don't Know, We Can't Even Add Up. The current level of our cumulative knowledge on Earth is the result of roughly 5,000 years of learning. Over the majority of that time, we learned things that we now know were just wrong. Rome is not the center of the universe. The seasons are not the gods' tempers. And the murder of virgin females does not make crops grow better. Earth is not unique, and the sun does not go around it. But the vast majority of our knowledge that is attestable has come to us in the last 250 years. Both the volume of that knowledge and its quality increasing rapidly and at an accelerating rate. So, keeping in mind what we have learned in the 90 years since my mother was born, where the next 90 years will take us is dizzyingly unimaginable. Where will another 200 years of learning take us? What about 1,000 more years? Where will 1,000 years more learning than ours have taken another thoughtful species, or many others? What does 1,000,000 years learning bring? If we were wise, we would be humble, but we seem to be neither. Subtitle: The Misconceptions and Their Implications. Granted, the misconception of 10 trillion and the misconception of 0 together do not prove that there is a community of species in the universe that knows practically everything there is to know. But they do prove that the odds such a community does not exist are so vastly prohibitive as to be reasonably insurmountable. If we honestly considered the immensity of our present unknown, even if we only considered all that we will learn over the next 90 years, we would be awakened as if from childhood and two things would become certain. One, it is obvious that we are dangerously primitive. And two, being a member in good standing of the universal community of thoughtful species is literally of unimaginable value. Whether you're an odds guy or not, clearly chances are that most of the things that are knowable in the universe are already known, just not by us. The amount of time that it would take for us to learn those things ourselves is beyond calculation. Yet the collective knowledge of the universe may soon be at our fingertips. If only we could get in touch with those who possess the knowledge, and if only we could demonstrate to them that they needn't fear we would use the knowledge to abuse others the way we now abuse ourselves. Subtitle: What Knowledge? Whatever wonders may lie in store, they add up to power and capacity beyond any ever yet imagined on Earth, even by the Pentagon. Computing power that will make what we have now look like rocks in pockets. Instantaneous communication across millions of light years by quantum entanglement and other physics as yet beyond our dreams. Manipulation of gravity and space-time for travel either way. Even practical immortality, in the sense of extending our life expectancy to at least a few hundred years. Perhaps awareness will emerge that a few hundred years of abundant prosperity and peace is about all that most individuals need or want. We might find out that the greatest wonder of all the wonders of the universe is that knowledge and awareness require power to eradicate evil. That asserting goodness is not merely a choice or a preference, but a responsibility and a duty. And that the responsibility is being fulfilled out there everywhere now. With such knowledge would certainly come the sufficient power to bring us on Earth to our knees. Why on Earth have we not been invaded? Why is Earth not encrusted with the condos of interstellar bastards, us cleaning their unimaginable asses? Whoever is keeping the advanced bastards away from Earth, it's not us. But perhaps the universe is so infinitely abundant that once you have the knowledge to reach into the stars, there is no need to bother with being evil. Simple arithmetic does suggest that we have some 10 billion stars per thoughtful species each. If you were already a member of the community of universal thoughtful species, what sort of a being would we look like to you? What would you be looking for in newcomers? Why have we not been invited past your velvet rope? Why have we neither seen nor heard from you? If you have a responsibility to stop evil, why have you not come here to do so? Do you know what ethics are? Subtitle: The Cumulative Knowledge of the Universe and Its Cost. Dear Earth, good day. I am your representative from the community of universal thoughtful species, and I bring you greetings from us all. As you are interested in sharing our cumulative knowledge, we have a couple of questions to ask you first. Questions that would be obvious to any responsible membership manager. How are you going to get along with 10 trillion other species in our community if you do not respect even your own? If you permit yourselves to treat your own kind so despicably, why would we grant you the power and reach to treat others as badly? Moreover, if you do not have the highest respect for the natural bounty that has befallen you, if you do not protect and nurture it for all you are worth, why would we afford to you the means to abuse as badly similar treasures elsewhere? Respect for yourselves and for the natural bounty that has befallen you are minimums of awareness. The absence of either indicates a spirit that we will never permit to be exported into our jurisdiction. When that has happened over the last several hundred million of your Earth years, it has always ended badly. We have had eons of experience with species like yours. Our experience overwhelmingly dictates that species of your social maturity must never be permitted anything more than a sophomoric knowledge of astrophysics and cosmology, much less the cumulative knowledge of the community of universal thoughtful species. Why? Because power combined with selfishness and other childish traits only perpetuates and increases abusiveness. You only need imagine yourself a mother with your fly-bitten infant dying malnourished in your arms, while your breasts yield nothing but desert dust and dying whimpers. Then take an honest look at your whole world. However, power combined with compassion opens the door to infinite wealth of all categories. In this case, unfortunately, examples exist in your world, if at all, only in your future. There may now be some limited, exclusive examples, but that is the point. Until they encompass all, they are no example at all. Your universe is vastly resplendent with such examples of infinite wealth, and if you are smart, you might want to join us and see. The concept that he who gathers owns is about as evolved as the concept of slavery. If this is the height to which you aspire, the universe will be better off without you. By behaving in a way that is respectful of ethics, however, you may take the miraculous bounty that has befallen you and make your Eden. But that requires courage, because it will not happen unless you love your planet and handle your pricks. My research informs me that your English word prick, though ill-mannered by some measure in proper company, is still your most precise and most commonly understood descriptor for persons who are completely selfish, who love to play people to their own advantage, and who don't feel the slightest reluctance to break hearts. The importance of my communication with you today is so great that I must risk decorum to ensure precision and common understanding. And so, yes, pricks, love your planet, and handle your pricks. Commitment to these two concepts demonstrates appreciation of and for what it is that has befallen you. They are minimum prerequisites. Were we to empower you now with our knowledge, we would be empowering the thoughtless selfishness that currently runs wild on Earth. We will not have you out here in the stars, taking natural bounty for granted and wreaking your selfish havoc. Without these prerequisites, it will be lose-lose for all of you. The victims of the injustices will lose, and the perpetrators will always feel insecure and at least vaguely horrified, if only in their sleep. They will not know why they feel this way and will medicate themselves against their feelings with materialism, power, and other fleeting, unearned comforts until all is lost. And as an unavoidable consequence, all of you on Earth will be left to stew in your own juices, as have trillions of ignorant species before you, never to learn the lessons that it takes to save and to love your lives, never to learn for reaching your expiry too soon. The ultimate irony is that most of the lessons you need to learn, and could have learned but have not, are things that you have already been taught. Yes, we've been watching. Those lessons may be summarized in one short sentence. Every thoughtful being is entitled to universal rights. They are different from what you call human rights, in that universal rights are accorded to all, whereas you accord your human rights only to those in particular countries, and even then, usually, not to all. Human rights that are only accorded to some, in particular countries, are, at best, country club rights. You do not admit all humans into your free countries. So, for most humans on your Earth, these rights are only available where most humans are not welcome, in your exclusive country clubs. You have not earned the standing to call them human rights until you accord them to all humans. Universal rights include respect for and security of the person, food, clothing, and shelter, access to the tools of self-improvement, healthcare, basic capital, and justice, and access to a healthy environment. This basket of rights may be summed up as freedom. As sure as they are taken for granted by all members of your country clubs, they are a birthright and thus an entitlement of us all, equally, everywhere. Every thoughtful being is entitled to freedom. These universal rights may not be taken for granted until you handle your pricks. Pricks are the only reason universal rights are not ubiquitous. It is not merely our right to accord universal rights to everybody. It is our responsibility. Accord, your English transitive verb is, but is not only, to bestow. It is also to make agree, to make correspond, or to make adapt. Thus, to accord to a person their universal rights, it must also be assured that their experience corresponds with their rights. Forgive us if we seem presumptuous, but these are your words. You, not us, have given them their meaning. As has been heard by many of you since you were children, rights and freedom come at a very high cost. The highest cost, you were told quite earnestly. Those words were truer even than your teachers thought. They thought they meant the cost of giving up their lives, fighting for freedom in wars. It includes that, but it is a price much higher, unfortunately, even than that. The true cost of freedom is the responsibility to accord that same freedom, all universal rights, to all. All means everybody, notwithstanding the private interests of all pricks and advantage takers and all those who act in their service, including ourselves. It is not merely a payment due upon death, but comes due again every moment our freedom continues. The dues of liberty arise daily and persist throughout our days of freedom. As beneficiaries of freedom, we must pay as we go. To earn freedom, we must strive daily to fulfill the responsibility to accord freedom to all. It is a simple irony. Liberty never becomes free. Once all are free, then we all must be kept that way. Free people are responsible for what they know, but do not oppose. Liberty is not self-executing. Only pricks take and abuse advantage unto themselves. Anyone who is satisfied enjoying their own freedom, but is careless about what others less fortunate must endure, has not earned freedom, but has merely taken liberties. Prickness is not subjective. It is the failure to pay the true costs of freedom, the abuse of universal rights to our personal advantage, thereby diminishing the universal rights of others without their consent. This diminishment of others' rights is what distinguishes hoarding pricks from those merely making good money. The epithet prick is well merited not only by those who take advantage, but also by those who either share in the advantage taken or act in the service of the advantage takers. You may not be a heartless perpetrator yourself, but you still may take much delight in the dividends heartless perpetrators pay. This is but one of the mechanisms whereby prickness extends to its shareholders, employees, and customers. Although most of your country club members do not, themselves, procure slaves, abuse workers, or poison environments, they engage in economic activity that benefits from those behaviors. 90% of the leather worn in your shoes, belts, jackets, or used in handbags and wallets to carry your money was tanned in South Asia, where people who are the same as any of us work submerged above their breasts in tanning fluids that have been banned elsewhere on Earth for 40 years. They stir the hides of the tanning chemicals with their legs and soft heels because sticks and paddles are too rough on the delicate leathers. Similar travesty yields gold, diamonds, chocolate, most hydrocarbons, chemicals, rare earths, minerals, manufactured goods, and much else from your developing world. Universal rights are crushed under the necessity of your cheap and convenient energy, leather coats and shoes, jewelry, electronic devices, tires, runaway fashions, and runaway jet fuel. It is no wonder that, although you may care about slavery, you do not notice this so much. It is easy to be seduced and confused by advantage. Every person is entitled to universal rights. America and Earth's other constitutional democracies have come very close to understanding rights. They fall short only in extent and in scope. As free people, it is our responsibility to accord these universal rights to all. Very often, our only way is against the whinging and griping of pricks. But nevertheless, to act is not merely our choice, nor is it just a preference. It is our duty as free persons. The natural bounty that has befallen you, earthlings, is not merely an astonishingly beautiful planet, but also one that functions so magnificently well as to give rise to you and to provide sustenance for you and for all your descendants. You only deserve it if you can serve it, but your descendants deserve it even if you do not. The responsibility is inescapable. Only behavior is optional. The chances of having both such a planet and consciousness, as earthlings do, may be 1 in 10 billion stars. Those odds are miraculous. Permitting pricks to lay waste to Earth's miraculous eternal capacity in the service of their own selfishness at the expense of the birthright of yourselves and your descendants is a gross abrogation of one's responsibility to their place, to their kind, and to their kindness. Now you see. You may allow your tiny planet and all who are upon it to go to hell. We in the community of universal thoughtful species will neither save you nor stop you. But we have timeless experience that requires us to ensure that your kind, who have not yet learned these first lessons of respect and responsibility, never be permitted to reach the stars. rest assured that we live up to our responsibilities. There are none like you out here. We have handled all of our pricks, and we ensure that universal rights are accorded to all eternally. As the wise among you will realize, the very phenomenon that you're not already overrun by alien pricks is proof of the fact. Ask why there has been no radio contact, and you may as well ask why there have been no smoke signals or jam-on-a-can-string telephone calls. The reason you have not heard from us before now is not because we couldn't, and it's not because communication is limited by the speed of light. That misconception depends on an understanding of physics that is new to you in your mother's lifetime. To your present understanding, radio waves, light, are as fast as you've got. Yet quantum entanglement, what your Einstein called spukhafte Fernwirkung, or spooky action at a distance, seem to have instantaneous effect across unlimited space over no time at all, absolutely in the same moment. In the next 100 years, you will learn as much as you did in the last 5,000. I think it still may be a bit early for you to declare there is no means in the physical universe except radio waves to communicate across vast space. It's like your Homer Simpson saying Rolls-Royce is the Cadillac of cars. No, the reason you haven't heard from us is, until you embrace awareness, we couldn't be bothered. The same reason you don't call your annoying acquaintance who only gets in touch when they want your money. Learn to pay the fair costs of your liberty. Learn to respect your natural bounty. If you do not, you will never meet us. If you do not, who would ever want to meet you? Of course, if you choose, you may live in peace and bounty practically forever. Would you like to go out? With all due respect, you only get this letter once. Sincere best wishes. Your community of universal thoughtful species. Cuts. Rep. Subtitle, Meanwhile, Back Here on Earth. All right. Well, thanks very much. That is what I would have said if I were a Cuts rep. It's a lot to take in, and there's obviously a lot more to come. With all your experience, you must know that it will be no time at all until we hear the whinging of pricks. Yeah, right. How could we possibly accomplish all that that implies? Good luck with that. Responsibility for all the world over? Pah. What about our freedoms? What about our private property rights? What's mine's mine, right? Yeah. And what about sovereignty? We've got a deal here. We do things our way. Saudi does things theirs. End of story. Science? Works good enough for us the way it is. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You're just one of those faint-hearted, commie, one-worldy radicals. I think I smell a redistributionist. If that's what you call an idea, you're right. We have limited interest. Next. Who the hell are we to say what's right for everybody? We've had it up to here with these bleeding-heart socialist liberals who say they want to save everybody because it's politically correct. Who does this guy think he is? Christ Almighty. Yes, pricks, indeed. You have had it up to here, and still there is so much further up to go. It's a lot to take in, and it doesn't make it easier to hear when your ears are jangling with the clangorous echo of losing advantage. Don't forget, you did ask.